Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, the man, the myth, the legend, Jack Piatelli, with a very nice new sweatshirt.
Yeah, I couldn't be more pumped today. I just got an Italian national lacrosse sweatshirt from our special guest today. I'm going to let you introduce our guest, but I just I'm really excited to talk to our guest, legendary coach, and we have here sitting next to us, Kyle.
This is Brian Vana from Lincoln Sudbury, also the head coach of the Italian national team. I thought you would do a better job introducing him. You know him apparently for over 30 years. So, I mean, you can big up him if you want. It's
well,
your boy.
Brian's a great ambassador of the game. Brian has always put the players first. He's built a phenomenal culture at Lincoln Sudbury with the youth program, high school program, state championships. But the reason why he's had so much success is he's always put the player first. It's always about the player, about the team. It's really a pleasure to have you, Brian. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me here. Appreciate it.
You got the longest intro we've ever done for anyone. But I think it's deserved. You know, when I started working at New England Lacrosse Journal and I started asking around about teams and guys to talk to my smaller network of national guys. And I brought up your name a couple times and they were like, I mean, you know, it's Vana. And I was like, I don't know what that means. What does that mean? And they're like, if you get him on the phone, you know, just be ready. I'm like, I'm always ready. What are you talking about? They're like, well, you know, he doesn't mince his words. And I was like, I love that. And then you and I talked for, I swear to God, it was an hour and a half, 2 hours. And it was great. I learned so much about you, your coaching philosophy, and everything. And then I went to see your event, NELS, all these high schools coming in, bringing their kids in and playing from all as far as like New York. I think you had a Minnesota team.
Washington State
Oregon team. Just, you know, just so many players coming over there. And I think that is emblematic of your style, which is very team first, as Jack said before we started.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't have much of a filter, which is good that we can stop the recording on this. You know, I am who I am. You know, I believe in our kids. I believe in effort. You know, one of our mottos at LS is effort equals respect. And I love coaching kids. I love growing the game. It's been, you know, as everyone sits here and talks about it, I just feel fortunate, you know, that I've had such great coaches and mentors in my life that have given me the game. The game's given me so much. I just enjoy being part of it, you know. And sometimes I think I'm very headstrong, you know, which is a good thing and a bad thing. You know, it's a double-edged sword. But, you know, I believe in towns. I believe in our high school. And, you know, I believe in the effort that our kids give. And I don't know. I just, that's our whole, our MO at LS is just is effort equals respect. And I'm trying to match the effort of my kids.
I think that's an amazing message because I'm from a place where we had no club teams, really. You know, I'm from central northern New Hampshire. We didn't have really anything. And growing up, I didn't have the option of playing Tomahawks. Now, kids do. I coach now, and I have two kids playing club on my whole program. And we have 32 kids. So for me, it's, you know, it's interesting to see that kind of philosophy be at the forefront of a successful Massachusetts team. Because I think people, and I don't think they're wrong, generally regard Massachusetts as club team ground zero.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I was part of Ground Zero, you know, 15 years ago or so. I was part of it because I, you know, again, Jack and I played in an era where we got a chance to play at basically every level there was way back then. And we were just, I played against Jack. I played against some great players in Massachusetts and watched them succeed at the national level. At every level, the pro level, the national club level, which back then was basically the pro league. And it was interesting that you saw a smattering back then. There was always a few guys per team, whatever the level, Division I, Division II, Division III, that were the best players on the team. They were the captains of the team. They were the best players. And I always had a respect for the Mass guys, you know, and how hard people went. And, you know, just before me, you know, with your era, Jack, and after both of us, we saw other guys. You know, you look at, you know, right after me was Dave Quinn and Michael Batista, Todd McNamara, you know, those guys, David Wren, you know, those guys went on to illustrious college careers. And so I think early on as a coach, when I was a head coach back in 2000, I felt as though Massachusetts was disrespected, you know, in terms of the lacrosse world. Knowing how impactful most of those players were, you know, I wanted to get some respect for the game. So, you know, we put together a really good club team, you know, that was going around and honestly smacking the crap out of everyone around the country. And but what I saw more and more in the club events was I saw more and more kids being pushed to repeat. I saw more and more fear of if you don't do this, then this. And I didn't like that. I knew that my relationships in the college world would help my kids at LS. I found myself spending more time on other people's kids than my own sons and my own players at Lincoln Sudbury. And at one point I was in New Jersey saying to myself, what the heck am I doing? You know, I need to be with my own boys and I need to be with my own town. And that's when I chose to really focus on our high school, our town. And we believe, I mean, club has its place. It absolutely does. At Lincoln Sudbury, we feel like we do a really good job training. We bring in lots of outside trainers. It's not just us. And we train the heck out of the kids. So I believe in training. And I believe the kids that don't have that town program or town, you know, it's that structure, they need it. You know, our guys, they can still choose to do it, but a lot of them don't, you know, so.
Tell me a little bit more about what you mean by you believe in training. What do you mean by that?
I've been around, again, ground zero. I've been around at a lot of training sessions, and a lot of them are high volume in terms of voice and repetitions of people scream and run and shoot. And listen, there's a part to that that's enticing. You know, you hear this, the loud music going and the loud screaming guy or, you know, whatever it is. Doing that, and there are a lot of people in a room. It looks like training, but it's not. I watched a very well-known player who was trying to teach my own kid at that time face-offs, and both his knees were on the ground. Not one, both. And I'm like, what are you doing? He was like, oh, this you have a better opportunity at winning the ball with both knees on the ground. And this person, this player was being, was paying for this advice. You know, so there was a lot of loud doesn't necessarily mean great. And listen, I'm not just trying to blow smoke towards Jack, but, you know, Jack's got some good trainers. He's got good men. He's got good mentors. And so in the training, I believe in quality training, and I don't believe that's necessarily at a high volume with your voice or just running and ripping all the time. You need to pull kids aside. You need to look at them eye to eye and say, hey, I like this, but your technique's wrong. It's great that you're shooting 95, but you could be shooting 100 if you did this. And I don't believe a lot of people do that. You know, I feel like I became a much better high school coach when I was a youth coach. When you really have to break down every basic and learn the basics. And by the way, like, you know, when we played, we didn't even know the basics, Jack. You know, we got by on athleticism and making decisions and instincts.
We taught ourselves how to play.
Yeah, and which is great, but just for the record, that didn't make us great trainers.
Right.
So back in like 06, I sought out what I thought was the best high school program in the country, and it was Darien. And I went down there and spent days down there, and I've done that several times since. Great, great trainers, great people. And so what I saw them doing in their own town really blew me away. I never complained about field space again because they had 110 kids per grade on one field.
Wow.
And they did it fantastically well. So I learned a lot back then, and I realized that, you know, we could train. And so I sought out people that were better than me. You know, just because we taught ourselves, which we did, doesn't necessarily make us the best guys with technique or the best guys with, you know, with execution. So sought those guys out, had them come train our kids. So we love training, you know, at LS. That's at the forefront of what we do. So,
bring up a good point. I remember right out of Springfield, 87, got the head coaching job at Brookline High, where I grew up. I don't know why they gave it to me, because I didn't know anything about coaching. Coached there for 2 years, but I remember, you know, looking at my game plan and, you know, what I was going to do as a coach, and I was looking at five rise and five clears and, you know, four or five man-up plays and four or five, you know, offensive sets and plays and so on and so forth. And then we started playing games, we started scrimmaging a little bit, and I realized we can't do any of this unless we can catch and throw.
Pass and catch, yeah.
Right? So you can have all the plays, all the structure in the world, but to your point, you've got to learn how to catch and throw. And I always say, master the basic fundamentals. And I started a Learn to Play program. My boys were in kindergarten. You know, catching and throwing and picking up ground balls. You know, it takes you to the different levels, and it's a process, right? And how important a ground ball is at Lincoln Sudbury. It's the difference between wins and losses. And kids don't understand, you know, if you become a good ground ball guy, you can make a huge difference.
2016, we won the state title against BC High. Miles Cohen, I still remember the ground ball. It was a tight game, and, you know, he was a guy who was a short stick D-mid. He had two unbelievable ground balls. We scored off both of them. We won by a goal. You know, so I agree with you. But again, to your question about training, for me, it's everything. And I don't think you need, for us anyways, at Lincoln Sudbury, we don't need a ton more than that. The other thing that we're trying to develop, I believe in training. I don't believe in this commitment that is so overreaching that kids can't play other sports. So we were, back then as well, the group that I was involved with was really forcing guys to, they weren't saying quit other sports, but the implication was there if you missed a certain thing and so on and so forth. And for me, you know, being a multi-sport athlete is the most important thing that we can coach, which we don't actually coach. We can just coach being coached by another team or program. This is to my point. I coached this kid back in 2014. His name's Johnny Sexton. He's probably one of the best players I've ever coached. And he's a great kid, and we have a fantastic relationship. You know, love that kid dearly. And when he came back after his freshman year, I said, you know, come over and, you know, let's talk about the season. And so I said, so tell me, I said, you know, you had a great career with us, and, you know, what are the things that we can improve on as coaches? What are you learning, and, you know, what can we improve on? And, you know, tell me a little bit about your experience.
And he played at Notre Dame.
Notre Dame, yeah. I mean, he was a two-time defensive player of the year in college. Plays in the PLL. I mean, this kid is everything that you know, want as a athlete. He's even a much better person, believe it or not. I mean, he's a very accomplished player, but he's a great kid. And again, I have a great relationship with him. And he said, you know, coach, he said, do you remember sophomore year I was going to quit football? And you were mad at me about quitting football. Now, he was one of the better players in the 2014 class in New England. You know, forget about just Massachusetts. And I told him I thought how important it was. And he was worried about getting injured. And, you know, he had just committed to Notre Dame with Jerry and Jerry Byrne at the time. And he ended up playing. And, you know, I asked, again, he was going back to his experiences at Lincoln Sudbury. And he said, don't take this the wrong way, but the best season I ever had was my senior year football season. And I said, well, I don't take that, you know, offensively at all. I said, why? And he said, because I wasn't the greatest football player. So I learned how to lead from the second tier position. And he said, and it taught me everything about leadership in that moment. In lacrosse, I was always the main guy. And in football, I never was. And I learned so much about leadership in that. And he goes, and I really overcame a lot to become a pretty good football player. And that has never left me. And so anytime that I'm talking to a parent who's just, again, fearful, they're in this moment, they're in this, you know, some clubs are out there really pressing kids. If you have a good high school coach, they'll find you. But you should play another sport. So that's the other piece about I value training versus this commitment that's, without saying it overtly, there's an implication there of not playing other sports. I don't like it. You know?
You bring up a very good point. And I was a multi-sport athlete. I played football, hockey, and lacrosse. Wasn't a very good football player. But when you're that, let's say, that B guy on that team or the end-of-the-bench guy on the football team, and then, like Sexton, he's a superstar on the lacrosse team. Well, when you're the superstar on the lacrosse team, you have a great appreciation for that B guy on your lacrosse team. The guy on the end of the bench, you know what he's going through.
Correct.
Because you lived it on the football team. And now that's what really brings the team and the culture together. Really having a
Johnny was that empathetic leader. He absolutely was because of that. I totally agree with you. That creates empathy, which is everything.
Those are your role players, and you need those role guys to be successful. And that's something that I wanted to talk to you about today, too, is what elements create state championship team? What three elements would you say the difference between winning and losing a state championship?
I mean, it's going to sound really corny, but I would say love is the number one thing. You know, I think our kids love each other. So what teams don't love each other, right? You know, everyone says they do, so on and so forth, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that's just germane to us, because it's not. But our kids work hard. You know, they work hard in the off season together. The effort that our kids give is something that I'm will always be grateful for. You know, one of our mottos is effort equals respect. So, you know, we'll start a kid who's the best player in practice the next day, no matter what. He's on the wing. And trust me, I have the goals to prove it, you know. But when that kid picks up a ground ball, when that kid does something great, our bench explodes. They explode over something like that versus exploding over behind the back goal or a laser shot or, you know, someone, you know, taking a kid's stick away from them, you know, defensively. So I think that within the effort and the respect for the effort, because there is respect for the effort, it creates a bond that's, for me, feels different. You know, we had a kid the other day score 6 goals. He wasn't even our player of the game. I mean, he wasn't even in the top 3. And we don't vote it. The kids do, you know. And he's an excellent player. We wouldn't have won without him. But, you know, we gave it to a guy who was a short stick D middie who was playing both ways. And he just was, he was an absolute beast on the field for us. So I would say the effort is the basal piece of it, which begets the love, you know, for your teammate, which I think gets us a ground ball every game. It might get us a goal every game, too. And then the final piece is really execution. You know, the kids need to execute. And I think they're in an atmosphere where the first two are critical, and the third one, the execution, usually comes from the first two. But we've been in games. We've lost state championships. And our kids loved each other back then, too. But we happened to hit 4 pipes. Or in one game, we hit 4 crossbars and 5 pipes, and the execution wasn't there, and we lost. You know, so I can't tell you that effort and love are going to guarantee it for you, but they certainly bring you 2/3 or 3/4 of the way there.
I think, you know, all of us are coaches, right? All 3 of us here. And the one thing that you're touching on, I think maybe if I can elaborate on it, is, you know, personally, when I started coaching, I didn't incorporate any of that, right?
Yeah, me either.
And it's like a lesson you learn later that, you know, when you have a great group and you can build with the group and the group comes together, even if you weren't there, you know that they would come together, but you kind of help them get to where they need to go. That's like the best feeling. I don't think it's, you know, and this is going to sound crazy, I don't think it's championships, man. I think it's like actually giving of yourself and letting it become what it's going to become with a good influence, like a guiding hand. I think a lot of coaches don't guide. They grab the collar and drag. And I can't stand that. I see it all the time. And I'm just like, what are you teaching these kids? Like, why can't you just use the basics, bring them along, like, in a way that you don't have to scream in their face? I don't understand that coaching anymore. I see it so often now, and especially on the circuit in the summer. But now as a high school coach, I even see it, and it just, like, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you that I've never screamed, but I absolutely have. I did yesterday at a kid who's injured his knee, and I told him, you know, I said, listen, he's worried about his knee. You know what I mean? He's
right.
got a knee brace on, and he's had surgery, and what a great game. I mean, I love the kid, you know, to death. But he's making plays right now that are, you know, he's worried about his knee. And, I yelled at him. I'm like, hey, I'm done with the excuse anymore. Like, you're good enough. You're okay. Mm-hmm. You know, so on and so forth. So I'd love to tell you that I don't. But I have.
Well, I'm not saying I don't yell. Trust me.
I have absolutely that. made those mistakes. But I think a lot of guys are joystickers. I think some guys are so excited. Joystickers, I mean, but, you know, you have those old joysticks that you move people around, and you put a kit of parts together and you move the ball. And that's, honestly, that's my big issue with a lot of outside programs, is I feel like they are an amassing of joystickers. There's not an amassing of technique, and there's not an amassing of playing the game. I still go back and say, and this is going to sound contrived because Jack's sitting here, but he knows I've told him this personally. I watched that 2017, your team, the Warrior Elite team, I think it was then, in 2017. And that was one of the best teams I saw in the country at any age, because they always made the extra pass. Someone was always getting a ground ball. Someone was playing the right way. I don't see that very often. We had a kid just come back from a private school where he was involved with a, you know, well-known club program, and you know, the trail of tears on that about. And this kid's a, you know, a good-sized kid, and he knew one thing: run and rip. And that ain't going to get him there at the next level.
No.
So listen, we could just have him run and rip every day long, all day long, and that probably would have helped us already in a couple games, but we're not going to do that. And so I feel like there's a lot of joystickers. I feel like there are not a lot of technique coaches, and I feel like that's something, and I'm not telling you that we've got the market cornered on that either. We're working on it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm always watching like other kids on a team who are cutting off ball. I go to my kids, I'm like, that kid just scored, but that was a great cut, you know? Or I watch a kid's technique and how he throws the ball. And I'll go to my guys and say, listen, remember we're talking about the technique and we're talking about our hand position. That kid's got it. Watch him the rest of the game. And so I'm always trying to get better with that, but I think that that is what we're focused on. And that, I think, helps with the execution. You can run a great man-up play. You can run a great play, and that is going to, you know, it's like the fish for a man thing. You know, you fish for a man, elite for a day. You know, if we get a great play, we might score today, but we're not teaching them the full game. And listen, we've lost games. We've lost championships because of this. And I would tell you that I think my kids are prepared for the next level, and we're just going to keep coaching that way. You know, you know, the last thing, too, is I'll say about that, the joystick piece and the why we're focused on training, is that I was at a point in our in my career and our program's growth that we were having, because there's just so much focus on repeating, Jack, you know, with a lot of these programs, we were having kids being told, A, they were getting cut, B, where they were on the fourth or fifth team, C, they weren't good enough to play, D, why are you even playing the sport, who won us state championships. Some of those kids became Division I players. One of them, who's actually coaching my youth program now, not only did he get cut and, you know, he wasn't going to play lacrosse. These kids were like, hey, some guy, Joe from somewhere, is telling me that I'm not good enough. I must not be good enough. The parents are like, oh, he must not be good enough. And I'm like, well, you're going to be a 3-year starter for us. What are you talking about? You know, one of them just became a college All-American. You know, these were guys who were getting cut. These are guys who were being told you're not good enough. And for me, as a guy who's been, as you've seen, Jack, I'm coaching, you know, all the way up, to watch those kids be told by somebody who does not know them the way I do, be told that they're not good enough, and these guys became 3-year starters for me, 2-year starters. That is the other piece. I think I get a really bad rap about Von Hate's club. That's not it. That's not the truth. I value training. And I value people that value multi-sport athletes and not breaking kids' spirits when they're 10, 14. Yeah.
Well, our motto is friends for life, and we played club lacrosse. You know, you and I were rivals when we played against each other, but we've become very good friends, and I obviously had a chance to travel to Italy together, which was one of the best experiences of my life. But I think my message to a lot of these coaches is, again, to your point, go coach youth lacrosse. It'll humble you. It'll teach you patience. And it gets you back to the basics of teaching these kids how to catch and throw, how to dodge, how to pick up a ground ball, how to play simple man-to-man defense, how to maybe slide. But really, it'll humble you. The problem with a lot of these coaches today, they coach, they don't know how to teach a kid how to catch and throw, how to dodge, you know, how to shoot, and just go and rip.
And they may have been natural athletes and just not had to learn. And so it's that whole, I can do it, therefore I can coach it. And that's not the case.
Right.
And, always.
And what sometimes Brian has done, it, he's built this culture. And the culture isn't about the kid who scores the six goals. It's about the kid who, second assist guy, who picked up the ground ball, got it over midfield, made a pass to the first attackman, passed to the other attackman, who's wide open for a goal. He's rewarding guys who should be really rewarded for that goal. Yeah. And what a lot of our coaches do and parents do, the kid who scores the six goals gets rewarded. And how about riding? Riding's a big part of this game. Mm-hmm. Okay, you look at how these college players ride today. Because if they don't ride, they're on the bench.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's funny because there's two sides to this, right? Like, you brought up that parents celebrate the six goals. I also, in this job, celebrate the six goals. Because that's my job, you know, like that's part of it. And it actually is the part of my job I don't like, because as many games as I can see, sometimes I can't see them all. So I have to trust the eyes of, you know, someone that I actually trust to ask about the game that saw it, or I have to find something, a way to see it myself, to write about it confidently. And there isn't always time to do that in the best way.
Well, why don't we start a column that says the grit guy, you know, yeah. And you can call coaches about that. That guy who's the glue guy, the grit guy, and you can promote that guy once a month, you know,
that's
once
good.
A week. I mean, because
hold on, I'm stealing that. Yeah. Hold on, let me write that down on my,
those guys,
on my podcast list.
Any coach that's listening to this knows how important those guys are.
I mean, the other part of it too is, like, I'm a coach, and Coach Kyle and writer Kyle were very separate for a long time. Like, I would be like, okay, no, I have to write about this. I can't use my coach, like, kind of side of my brain to write about this, because people think it's boring, first of all. Second of all, it comes at a different angle at everything, right? So for me as a coach now, everyone asks me, like, why are you coaching JV in Hopkinton? I'm like, because it's one town away from where I grew up, and I had no coaches growing up. Mm. That's why. And people are like, yeah, but it's JV. I'm like, I don't care that it's JV. I applied for the job. I've got a decent resume. And the AD was like, why do you want this? Mm. And I was like, my sister lives in the town. Also, it's one town away from me, and my school is not hiring. Will you take me? And he's like, yeah. Do you know the head coach? I'm like, no. He's like, do you want to call him? And I called him, and we had a chat, and we're totally different people, totally different philosophies, but it works because I focus on developing.
Yeah.
You know, that, and as a writer, that's not what I do, you know, so it's very different, right?
I mean, in Italy right now, I mean, I feel like I've gone back to 1981, you know, I mean, we're reteaching the game at its base level. Right. Jack has seen it.
The great experience about Italy, and the reason why you're coaching JV, you know why? Those kids want to be there. They want to learn. I'd rather work with those kids than work with 10 kids who think they're superstars.
Yeah.
The kids who are scoring the six goals and aren't riding and aren't good teammates.
100%.
And, you know, the thank yous we got from the players in Italy thanking us for coming over and working with them.
And those guys are driving an hour to get there.
And over and over again. I mean, it was just a pleasure. I didn't get paid to do it. I paid my way to go over there and do everything because I wanted to do it. It was a great, one of the best experiences of my life.
Listen, we've all got our stories about our guy. You know, when we were playing in Poland for the European qualifiers, you know, I'm coaching guys that are out of college from the United States, guys in the PLL, and guys who can barely, you know, catch and throw from Italy. That's our team, you know, and creating that team is very difficult because you could find a guy that can run and rip that doesn't talk to the guys on the sideline. He just wants to be a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want those guys. And by the way, that cost us, that will cost us games in the World Games too, you know. But I believe if we build the culture the right way, we could be great. Italia could be great. Not good. They could be great. The night before we started, I asked each guy, you know, questions about themselves, you know, just to get to know each other as an icebreaker, you know, different things. And one of the things I asked everybody was, you know, who gave you your first stick? And it was amazing to hear the stories from guys in the United States and, you know, the PLL who gave them their stick, and how much they still keep in touch with them today, to the guys in Italy, and who the new creators or founders of the game in Italy are. They happen to be my players right now, which is really cool to see one guy being pointed to. His name was Samueli. I don't know if you remember him, but he's this like super charismatic guy. Yeah. He loves everybody. He started another youth program in another city. I mean, this guy he's the guy. And so I asked all the guys to write their coaches a note before the game and just say, you know, to thank them for giving them the stick. And I think for me, you know, Rick Clark gave me my stick, you know, and my coaches to me were, you know, they gave me every opportunity. Sometimes when I probably didn't deserve it either. Who gave you your first stick?
I was going to ask Jack. I think, so I worked at a soccer store in like high school, and I think someone got it from there and like left it in the Austin Found. And I think I just took it.
And who developed it after that? Who was your first coach?
My first coach was my high school coach. I played box when I was like 14 at a rink behind Everett Arena. I learned to play box first.
Yeah,
that's great. And I played in like gym class, and I was like the best lacrosse player in gym class. It didn't mean anything because like we didn't have it. We didn't get it till I was a sophomore in high school. Yeah. So I'm playing with, and I actually, I can tell you the guys that influenced me the most were the Cesare brothers. So two of them went to Hobart, and one of them is, I think he's the all-time leading scorer at Southern New Hampshire, Mike Cesare.
Okay.
And they played in this league with all these young high school kids, and all of us were terrible.
Yeah.
But they all went to play D1. And I would ask them all the time, like, how do you do this? Like, how do you do that? Like, what is this? Like, how do I move? You know, I don't know how to do any of this. And they're like, just, you know, calm down, you know, like just go smooth and use the things that you have from those other sports. So I was a soccer and basketball kid. And I know. Go ahead. I know. I'm
no comment.
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
I'm going to be kind today.
Yeah, that's good. This is a kind podcast. And they said, just use the things from there. And the thing that translated for me all the way through, and the thing that I still teach, is basketball foot position for defense.
Sure.
And then I went to high school, and I was a defender in high school and an attackman in college. So it all flipped when I did my PG year at Tilton and then my first year at
all right, that's enough about your career. Let's
no,
move
no.
on.
It's really bad. No, no, wait, hey. He asked a question. No, I gave him a stick answer, but I want to know where you got your first
one. Interesting, because when I grew up in Brookline, I didn't know anything about lacrosse. Never, you know, hockey was hockey, and Pop Warner football, and Little League baseball, and so my older brother went off to Kent to teach and coach, and I went on a visit to school. I was going to play hockey there, and the captain of the lacrosse team handed me the stick and said, "Hey, here's a lacrosse stick. Take a look at it. To bring it home, play with it. You know, go on a wall ball." Fell in love with it, and here I am.
What kind of stick was it, though? Do you remember?
It was a Sam SDX. I still have it.
What was yours?
Super Light 2, Brine, red with gold gold mesh.
You're going to love this. Brine M1.
The M Series.
You're young.
M Series.
M1, MX, MD.
He's young.
Yeah. Well, oh, no, I'm sorry. It was an MX and then an M1. I broke it my first game.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
The Men's Lacrosse Championships, where speed and power meets precision and creativity. And they give it everything they got, from face-off to the final whistle. Go big for every goal. Go beyond your limits and enter the NCAA universe. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, May 28th through 30th at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, Connecticut. Get your seats today at ncaa.com/mlacrosse.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
If you have the time, you got to go to a Lincoln Sudbury game at Lincoln Sudbury and see all the players watching the game playing wall ball, because they have wall ball right next to the game field, and there are kids running around the fields with lacrosse stick, boys, girls, moms and dads. It's an event, and it's a wonderful experience, and that's what Brian has created, is this culture. And I want to get back to what you were talking about, Brian, and my two sons had the experience of going to Portugal. Brian was the coach of the Italian team, invited my two sons to play. Best college, lacrosse experience ever had. Greatest moment was one of the Italian national players who really couldn't handle the ball, picked ground ball, loved meeting the Americans, loved being there, but all the Americans, all the Italians, they embraced each other. When he scored the goal,
Felipe,
right? He was on the crease. Mm-hmm. I don't know who passed it to him. One of our players had the confidence. Everyone thought he was going to drop it.
It was probably John.
My son, John. Yeah. And he caught it, right? And he scored. And we went crazy. I mean, those are moments you don't forget. And that's why we do what we do.
Yeah, it's the culture piece of it. You know, everyone talks about culture now. It's so funny. Yeah. You know, it's like the new
buzzword. It's a
buzzword. Yeah. And it's either real or it isn't.
Right.
And you know it when you know it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I think from me, you know, starting to get involved with Italy, I just feel like as one of my parents emailed me, she's Italian, Brett Williams' mom, he came with us. She said, rinse and repeat. You know, rinse and repeat. It's time to repeat what you did here and do it over there. And when you say I've developed it, you know, it's nice to hear, but it's certainly not. I mean, there are so many people that are part of the community, and that's what really has worked. So we have this phrase called Wamatin. It's on my hat. And, you know, it's a Native American word. It means to be brotherly. And years ago, again, this was like right around this time I was going to Darien. I was trying to find out what we were missing. We were doing well in lacrosse, but we didn't have a ton of soul. You know, we were kind of cyborgy, where we would just beat teams, and there just wasn't enough joy in it. And so that's when I started searching around, seeing, you know, what can we do better. And I asked one of my kids who was wearing number 2, and I said, "Hey, do you know who wore that number?" And he said, "No." And I said, "David Wren." And he said, "Who's David Wren?" And now David Wren for Lincoln Sudbury is like, you know, Michael Jordan of Lincoln Sudbury. You know, he's the best player that's ever played here. He went on to play at Virginia for 4 years. I think they won a national title, a few time All-American, captain. He was the dude. And I couldn't believe that he didn't know who it was. And I was just about to say to our good friend Ando, who since passed away, you know, these kids, they don't understand it. And I was just like, you know, that's on me. They just don't understand it because we haven't taught them anything. So we started a jersey ceremony years ago. You know, some programs have not, you know, one number that they give out. We give out every number. And our alumni write back to the kid when they come to the team. The kids have to read the letter out to the group when they become part of the team. And it's a letter from, like, imagine you wear Jack Piatelli's number. Jack Piatelli is writing you a note about your experiences at Brookline High School and what lacrosse meant to you and what it's done for you in your life and, you know, so on and so forth. And and it's meaningful. It's very meaningful to the kids. It's meaningful to the alumni to be asked to write. And there's a whole connectivity there between the alumni and the high school kids. So in that, we talked about being part of the community, which is really what Wimatin means to us, is just being part of the community and being brotherly, you know, taking care of each other, doing the right things on the field, off the field. Are kids perfect? No. Do they strive to be great? Yeah. You know, the amount of things that our kids do in the community would blow your mind. And you'll never see them in the paper. You'll never see it. We just don't do that. But I can tell you, I have the letters from the people where we shovel snow, where we rake leaves, where we from the chief of police, you know, from the chief of the fire department, you know, of the things that our kids do in the community. And so for me, I learned a long time ago how important community is, and that it's not a tagline. You know, if you're doing it the right way, it's not a tagline. It's real. And it's, I mean, on the field, it's a goal of game. It just is, you know, and you talk about the kids being around the fields, you know, 2019, we're playing Hingham in the state finals, and there's a video of one of our players, Johnny Hurley, who's at Hobart right now, and the camera catches his eye, and you could see it's kind of taken from the side, and he's looking up at something, and he starts smiling before the game, and, you know, I didn't know what it was. And the papers interviewed him at the end of the game. We played a really good team in Hingham, and we played a great game, and we were fortunate to win. And he came up at the end of the game, and the guy goes, you know, what happened, you know, during the game? You know, why'd you play so well? And he said, I looked up into the stands, and all the youth kids, just before the game started, all the youth kids that I coach, because all the kids coach in the youth program, were there. And he goes, and something just made me smile, and I just wasn't going to let them down.
And I think what people don't, maybe understand that coaches are very different, but, you know, and I'm not trying to just relate everything to me coaching at all, but if I'm on a team where we vote for captains, I always, before we vote, I say the captain is a service position.
Sure.
The captain is not a authority position. You serve the rest of the team with to the best of your ability, and that's why it's important, right? It's not just, I'm the captain, I don't have to carry the balls. No, you are the captain, and you carry the balls because you're the captain. You are the captain because you carry the goal onto the field. You are the captain because you choose to do these things. And I think, you know, I'm so glad you're here, because I can't wait to steal all of this the rest of my life.
It's called servant leadership.
Yes, and it's 100% true. And I was going to ask you, while you were going through all the things that you were saying and the way that you explain your philosophies, I was going to ask you this, and I feel like I know the answer, but I want to know, like, where did it go wrong with all these other places? Because why do I not see that now? Even if I'm, you know, interviewing a kid, oh, you're an All-American, you're a number one recruit, great. Are you, like, a good dude? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that matters a lot, and it doesn't get ever talked about, right? Like, what happened to make lacrosse this kind of thing?
The other thing that people don't talk about is when that number one high school recruit ends up at North Carolina, and he fails out, or he doesn't perform. Doesn't play.
Yeah.
No one talks about that. Not that they should. But
yeah, it's again, back to that whole experience before. I had kids being recruited from at that time, the number one school college in the country. And the coach didn't call me about this kid playing for him. And I'm like, I called the coach. And I mean, listen, let's have it be your kid.
Sure.
Okay, your kid gets recruited to North Carolina, let's say. It's not the school, but let's say it's North Carolina. And I know that your kid can't play there. And I truly care about your kid. You know, it's, and I want the best for your kid. And whether he goes to Middlebury or he goes to UNC, we just want the best for the kid. Mm-hmm. I called that coach. I'm like, hey, have you seen him play? Well, yeah, I saw him play for a quarter in some tournament, club tournament. Mm-hmm. And he looked really good. And I'm like, well, that's good. And I love this kid. But he doesn't start for me. How is that kid going to be successful for you?
All right, Coach, we're going to leave it there for now. But we'll have more for you next week in part two of this fascinating discussion with LS head coach and Team Italia head coach, Brian Vana. Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli and our producer, Steve Safran, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.